This podcast is supported by The Real Real.
You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The Real Real. The Real Real is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The Real Real. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
Welcome back all. I've made it back. Got back from Morocco a day and a half ago. That was 1,100 miles, 7 or 8 days, 20 motorbikes. Unforgettable trip, really, really, really incredible. Feels great to be back because I've been so non-stop with trips this year. I don't think I've ever done so many. Started off in the Jeep, drive down to the Sahara Desert with Monica in January. Next up, £200 budget to get to Sardinia, which I just failed on. Next up, Arctic Circle with the El Lobo team, a whole load of Harley Davidsons. Moving house then, and then off to Romania with my dad in the Jeep, Carpathian Mountains off-roading, and then Sahara Desert, 20 motorbikes, biker B&B. Never been so non-stop. I have nothing planned now, not one thing. It's quite nice, just to chill out. Great to be back, delighted to be back, but what a trip. Thank you as ever, everyone, for continuing to get in touch, sharing your thoughts and opinions. Apologies for a couple of mistakes I made over the past one or two podcasts. Mistakes are quite common with me, but even more so the past couple of weeks because I tried giving Monica all of the details for the bikes I was talking about, but I think I messed up a few folders. So apologies. Thanks for getting in touch, sharing your thoughts and opinions. It's thanks to you that I can make these podcast episodes on a weekly basis, so please do continue to do so. Cannot tell you how much I appreciate it. Best place to do so, comment section below. And if you have a longer story, maybe with some pictures, please do email hi@tuesdayatdobbs.com. Let us begin. The reality of owning highly tuned dream machines. We know that we can go out there and we can buy the two-wheeled equivalent of a Ferrari, a Ducati. These can be affordable. You can easily pick up a dream machine Ducati for under 5K. That is so easy. But what's the reality like? I'll start off with Donald. Freddie, a mate of mine, recently looked at buying the Ducati Diavel. So, he rang a Ducati mechanic shop here in Sydney, not a dealership, just a Ducati specialist, and asked what the cost of the major service would be. The reply, $2,300 Aussie dollars. And in pounds sterling, £1,142. Yeah, that seems to be pretty much industry average. Just about the cheapest I've seen it. Some people say they can get it for 800, maybe a bit less if you go off season. But in reality, yeah, you're looking at a grand minimum for these big 18,000 mile services for Ducatis. Cyber Demon carries on. This, I always like this. This is absolute first-hand experience. I've owned four Diavels and they are the most fun bike. But nothing but problems with them. And this is from someone who's owned four of them. The engine blew on... This is absolutely crazy. The engine blew on two of them. Blew up. With a whole list of other problems. Wow. As much as I love them, the repairs were just too expensive and they are very complicated to take apart. I've gone back to simpler designs as I ride far too much to be able to maintain another Diavel. Fascinating insight. Owned four, all of them a problem, two of them the engines blew up. I'll go on to this now. This is where it takes a fascinating turn. This is from Sam. Freddie, the Desmo debate in relation to the price of servicing is contentious. Ducati cheerleaders justify it as being the price of owning a high-performance motorcycle. I, however, say it's the price of owning a poorly designed high-performance motorcycle. MFM replies to this. So what would you say? This is where it gets even more fascinating. What would you say about a motorcycle? He replies here slightly facetiously to Sam. What would you say about a motorcycle that never needs a valve adjustment? Well, this sounds so simple. Just motorcycle companies build motorbikes that are self-adjusting. So you don't need these £1,000 to £1,500 periodic valve adjustments, which are one of the biggest costs in motorcycling. £1,000 to £1,500 every 15,000 to 20,000 miles. And often there's nothing wrong with them, but you still have to do these ridiculous checks. Why is there not a brand doing it? Or is there? So, this is MFM. Facetious reply here. So what would you say about a motorcycle that never needs valve adjustment? You know, like those well-designed, high-performance Harley Davidsons. Right, that last bit was facetious, by the way. But the point remains here. Someone tell me if I'm wrong. I believe Harley Davidson are the only brand. Please do tell me if I'm wrong. I'll share this. I believe they're the only brand of motorcycle that, as standard across the range, fit, what are they called? Hydraulic self-adjusting valves. They're called here, I've got it written down so I knew I'd forget this, hydraulic lifters. This is where a system is fitted so the motorbikes, the Harley Davidsons, the valve clearances will adjust all the time in line with the bike. So you don't ever have to worry about these ridiculous valve checks. It sounds too good to be true. This basically means you can be saving £1,000 plus every 15,000 to 20,000 miles. That is a gigantic amount of money. That is also a really big consideration for Harley Davidsons and against every other brand that doesn't have hydraulic self-lifting or hydraulic self-lifters. I always forget the term. Monica, you're going to have to do some ridiculous cutting here with that. I can't remember it. Listen to this. Google AI says this. Harley Davidson began using hydraulic valve lifters. There you go. Hydraulic valve lifters. Can anyone guess the date? Bear in mind, almost no other brand of motorcycle deems it necessary to have these hydraulic valve lifters on their bike, meaning that they're happy for customers like you and I to fork out £1,000 a time. When did Harley Davidson come out with this? Someone shout down the screen. 1948, 80 years ago, 78 years ago, with the introduction of the Panhead engine. This innovation provided self-adjusting valves which significantly reduced maintenance needs and engine noise. Sounds so obvious. So, Steve, my friend over in the USA, Steve has the answer for all of you. From Steve, my good old 1998 Harley Heritage Springer has 69,000 miles on the clock. It's almost 28 years old. You know what I noticed about your high mileage bikes? They're all worthless. $2,000 to $3,000 for a fairly new bike, but my good old Harley is still, with all these miles, worth more than what I paid for it. Would you all like frugal, sensible, economical motoring? I've got just the bike for you. With Steve's inspiration here, look what I found for the ultimate in economical motoring. A 1992 Harley Davidson Heritage Softail. Not the Springer one, but this is not where I expected to be going for the ultimate in eco motorcycling. Hydraulically adjusted valves, so you never have to worry about those huge bills. Carbureted, very simple, no electronics to go wrong. And key here, £7,500, which is a lot, you could say, for a 33-year-old bike. But when you know that this bike isn't going to drop a penny in value, are we looking here at the ultimate frugal motorcycling? Plus, also, forget about all that common sense stuff. Look at it. Is that not a thing of rare beauty in that beige and whatever kind of green that is? That is so Beautiful. If I was looking for a Harley Davidson with, I've just noticed, one white wool tie on the back and not one on the front. For me, that's alarm bells ringing when I see that. I've just noticed. That means the person looking after this bike has run out of money. Because if they've run out of money to match both front and back tires, they've also run out of money to maintain the bike. That's alarm bells ringing, I'll be honest with you, but I like nice looking colours. So there you go. The ultimate in frugal motorcycling. Who'd have guessed it? It's a Harley Davidson. Thank you so much, everyone, for watching. No, I'm joking. I'll carry on. Steve, thank you. Next up, should have been my bike of the week. A step too far, or imitation being the finest form of flattery. Vincent says this. Freddie, if you like the new Honda CB500F, compare and contrast this upcoming brand new Honda bike with the ZX Moto ZX500F. Okay, remember that. ZX Moto is the brand and the ZX500F is the model. Put a picture up of it right now here. Pretty similar, says Vincent, wouldn't you say? And in this case, it looks like the copy will make it to market before the original. Wow. Okay, Vincent, let's just open up these two here in front of me right now. Here is the new ZX Moto. It's a really good looking bike. Really good looking bike. I like it. They've done a great job. And here is the Honda. Yeah, you need a trained eye. The person who isn't into bikes would say these are the same make and model. They're identical. Absolutely identical. Okay, it's uncanny. I'm looking at it now, trying to find obvious differences here, but I can't. You have to say this ZX Moto is an excellent looking bike, but the reason it's an excellent looking bike is because they've just copied the Honda. The problem for Honda is, this is almost the same specs. I think it's going to be five horsepower less. Somehow the ZX Moto may even be a tiny bit lighter, but we have to wait and see what the specs say. It will certainly be cheaper. Will it be finished to the same standard? I find it hard to believe, but the Chinese are pushing on so quickly now. The one big thing, of course, look, it's not a Honda. And Honda is Honda, and it will always be Honda. But my Lord, that looks really, really similar. I mean, it's copying, isn't it? When you look at it like that, it's copying. This is out in China, or imminently to be launched in China. No official date for coming out in Europe, but it's commonly believed this is going to beat Honda to the mark to launch the bikes in Europe. Will it kick off as an obvious copy of Honda? I don't know. That remains to be seen, but absolutely 100%. Vincent, thank you for bringing that to my attention. That is a carbon copy. I move on. Oh, this is fascinating. Real fuel economy. This is from Terry. Sorry, Freddie. I have to comment. Oh, this is in response to, I always say, the standard fuel economy on my Triumph Bonneville is 45 miles per gallon. Sorry for the Europeans who do things in litres per kilometre, but I'll keep it all relevant and you can compare from bike to bike here. So everything here will be in UK miles per gallon. I know it's a bit complicated. I always say my Triumph Bonneville does 45 miles per gallon. Just to give relativity, my Jeep Wrangler does 25 miles per gallon. Fiat 500 does 60 miles per gallon. A very good frugal new Bonneville, the Triumph Speed Twin 900, that's about 72 to 70 miles per gallon. Really economical. There's some relativity. Listen to Terry here. Sorry, Freddie. I have to comment. As an owner of a Triumph Speed Twin, first generation, and an ex-owner of the Triumph T100 SE, just like yours, your records of your own fuel economy shock me. My current Triumph Bonneville T120 does well over 55 miles per gallon sometimes, and sometimes even over 60 miles per gallon, giving me at least 150 miles of range between fill-ups. Remember those figures. My old Triumph 900 SE always, this is the equivalent model of mine, same era, always gave me more topping out at about 170 miles between fill-ups and around 65 miles per gallon, which is what it equates to for that 170 mile range. I'm no commuter. These are hard-ridden weekend rideouts, so I would suggest you speak to Joe and ask him to check your data and ask if everything is okay. Terry, this is, I promise you, 45 miles per gallon, maybe up to 50 to push, exactly what my era of Bonneville should do. This is what's stated when MCN test ride it, they tested 50 miles per gallon. And also, this is exactly what it should be if I show you some stats here. So, this is proof that my motorbike does 45 miles per gallon, and I shall also do a couple of examples for other bikes here. Take a look at this. I found this really interesting. I'm just opening up three different fuel economy figures from three different motorbikes. I'm going to start with my bike. The tank size on my bike is 16.6 liters. I can get about 165 miles to the tank, absolute full to absolute empty. That is me pushing it to the limit there. Even if I do that, full tank, go down and ride all the way till there isn't even 1 meter left in the tank. You can see here, 16.6 liters used, distance 160.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The Real Real. The Real Real is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The Real Real. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
55 miles. Miles per gallon, British miles per gallon, 45. It is absolutely bang on, exactly as I say. Terry, then if we look at your Triumph Bonneville T120, you say you get 150 miles per tank, and I've seen that the Triumph T120's tank size is 14.5 litres. That means, Terry, you're not getting 60 miles per gallon, you're getting 47.3 miles per gallon, which is actually less than you expect. I'll do one more here, just to show the polar opposite end of the spectrum from a bike I've been using for over 1,000 miles, the Royal Enfield Himalayan. That was getting at least 280 miles per tank. That's excellent. That's a 17 litre tank, and that equates to 75 miles per gallon. It's spot on every single time. So Terry, I promise you, 45 miles per gallon is exactly right for my bike. And you're probably getting about 15 miles per gallon, maybe 10 miles per gallon, less than you think you are. I'll move on, but Terry, I massively appreciate it. Thank you so much. And you're not alone. A lot of people have said, Freddie, 45 miles per gallon is not a lot on your Bonneville. I keep telling them, that's standard on my Bonneville. The economy has got way better with the new 900cc Triumphs, but on my one, it is surprisingly bad, weirdly bad actually, but that is one way that newer bikes are better. They use less fuel, way, way less fuel. The new Bonneville's 900's 70 mpg plus, and I've tested that firsthand, I can guarantee it. Right, moving on, the good old KLE. From Italy, Max in Italy. Freddie, I wrote about a great, underrated bike, and I think you've never talked about it before. The Kawasaki KLE 500, made from 1991 to 2007. Acquired 4.5 years ago in April 2021, and I hope to never find an excuse to sell it, even though emission laws are getting more tight here in Milan. The engine's simple, reliable, Japanese carbureted 500cc parallel twin, but it can be super flexible in its usage. It can be used to cruise, sipping fuel along Lake Como in sixth gear at 50 kilometers an hour. It can also be used screaming all day long at 11,500 revs along a mountain pass if you need it to. It can also do 140 kilometers an hour for hours on the motorway, and of course, it can be used in traffic with ease. It's such a great package if you think that you can get one for a bargain price on the used market. Here in Italy, for example, terrible ones go for about 800 euros, and you can get a nice one for about 2,500 euros. I bought mine With 20,000 kilometres on the clock in 2021, and just last weekend, I've passed the 60,000 kilometre mark. Massimo, that's some good mileage you're putting on it there. That's fantastic. Fun fact, two KLEs in... Oh, this is brilliant. Two KLEs in 1992 have managed to finish the Dakar. This is incredible. Wow. In 19th and 20th place overall. But this is something even the more famous brother, the KLR 650, has not managed to finish. This really hard race. I really hope that more people get to know about this kind of forgotten bike. Max from Italy. That's incredible. So two of these KLEs 33 years ago finished the Paris-Dakar rally. That's it. There's a sales pitch in itself. Right, I've heard from these. The best generations to go for, generation one, generation two. That means ideally, if you want the ultra simple bikes before they had to comply with more stringent emissions regulations and therefore had to adapt, if you want the really pure ones, go for a model up to the year 2004. That's as simple as it gets, before the bikes started getting somewhat suffocated with these new emissions standards. So, what can I find? Well, first off, for some weird reason, I don't know if these were sold in the UK. It's incredibly hard to find these pre-2005 models. Incredibly difficult. So my guess is they were sold in Europe, but not as much in the UK. So what I've done, I've looked for one pre-1995, so instead of paying 30% import duties, you only pay, I think, between 2 and 4%, something around that figure. So, pre-1995, I've gone over to Italy because that's where Massimo is from, and I've found. For me, colours are really important for these bikes. I know you can, I think, get black ones and things like that, but we're talking 1980s and 1990s. This is bang on the era that's in vogue right now. And I want those 1980s, those 1990s colours. I also want a bike that I think has been well loved because I'm going to fly over to Italy. I want to pick up a special bike, a bike that's clearly been loved. And this is the one I go for. 1991, 2,600 euros. So this is on the more expensive end of the spectrum, but take a look at this colour combo. A deep purple colour, pink lettering, pink seat, absolutely ludicrous. But it's of its time. God, I really like these. And a high exhaust. It does look like a purposeful bike that could do anything. Great description from the seller here. Looks like he's had it for 2 years and done 4,500 kilometres in that time. He's done the oil, filter, and lots of other stuff there. Just picking up a few bits of Italian throughout. Loads of stuff done to it. Well-loved bike. Private seller. Take a trip over to Italy. Pick the bike up. You're going to love that bike so much more, knowing you've gone over to Italy to pick it up and you brought it back home. And imagine the feeling when you tuck it up in your garage after that ride back. I love it. Massimo, thank you so much. Absolutely stunning. And we move on now to Japan. Freddie, I'm writing, these pics. I'm writing this from plane seat 29D, somewhere above Indonesia, on my way back home to Australia after a 3-week bike trip through Japan as a solo 34-year-old traveller. I hired a Honda GB350 for the trip, and man, what a great bike. A real unsuspecting lightweight tourer that I covered about 2,500 kilometres on, from riding through the world's biggest city to beautiful coastal stretches, highways up to Mount Fuji, back streets of rural towns, tight and narrow misty mountain passes, and everything in between. The engine's an absolute peach, with nice torque from its lazy, long-stroke single cylinder. Perfect for the slow ascents up mountains and relaxed cruising, enjoying the great thud-thud engine note. All it asked for, as we're talking about economy this week, all it asked for in return for all this fun was 2.8 litres per 100 kilometres, and that equates to 84 miles per gallon. From a motorbike, that is very, very good. That's 10 miles per gallon, even more than the Himalayan, which is economical. The domestic bike culture here in Japan is huge. I frequently saw both solo riders and groups of riders, and they were on all sorts of both current and classic bikes. There's still a clear and significant following for big Japanese bikes of the 70s and 80s there. And I'd often see classics like the Honda 754s, or the big Kawasaki Zeds getting ridden. Biker groups seem to nearly always be on mixed bikes too. Not uncommon to see another GB350 cruising with a Jap classic or a Harley. Just people out having a good time together on the awesome riding roads. There actually seemed to be a way bigger following of classic American bikes than I'd expected. I would have loved to, or I would have seen about 10 Harley Davidsons from the 50s and 60s, the oldest of which had been ridden as far as roads will take you, up Mount Fuji. I've heard about this, Julian. The Japanese love, well, the Japanese really like American culture in general, but they love American vehicles, motorbikes and cars. And I know this because when I was looking for a Jeep Wrangler, the Japanese love Wranglers so much, it's one of the markets to pick if you want to look for a petrol Wrangler. Because of course they have the steering wheel on the right-hand side, like in the UK, and they love them so much in Japan that you can so easily have your unlimited pick of Wranglers from there. So there are a load of Japanese Jeep Wranglers in the UK for that exact reason. They really like the Americana stuff. Carrying on, upon returning the bike to the rental place in Tokyo, the guy shows me his phone with a translated, "Thank you for hiring the bike for a long time and bringing it back safely" on the screen. Okay. I also thought I'd thrown a basic map of the route I took, slowly down the coast, then a bit of a rapid return via the Japanese Alps, where it's already started getting seriously cold. I think the route I took is closed from November to March, and I started, I started freaking out that I'd gotten myself into trouble and that I'd be at an altitude for too long and be found frozen to the bike in March, Julian. Julian, thank you for that. Those pics are phenomenal. And 3 weeks doing that. That is a serious trip. Tip my hat to you. Thank you for sharing it. Bike of the week. Greetings from Portugal. This is from Hugo. Freddie, I came across some exciting news from Kawasaki that I thought would interest you and your audience. There's chatter about a new model in the... Has anyone heard of this? I wonder if this will be at EICMA, which is about to happen. New model, GPZ 900R line, the iconic machine that's widely recognized as the first ninja and famous for its appearance in Top Gun. It sounds like Kawasaki might be reviving or reimagining the GPZ 900R with a modern twist, an announcement that could thrill many enthusiasts. Hugo. Yeah, Hugo, I was watching the video you kindly sent me and a few others as well. If it looks anything like this, I mean, it's so true to the original. Kawasaki have done an incredible job. If this is to be believed, if these pictures are to be believed, it looks fantastic. It's going to be based, from what I hear, on the Kawasaki Z900 RS, which is excellent because that's a brilliant bike. And they're calling it, or they will call it, if this happens, a retro sports bike. I think it's bang on. And again, 1980s, 1990s stuff is absolutely hot as you like right now. The only thing with this, Hugo, is that there's another bike from the 80s, from another Japanese brand, that I was so damn sure would be a sales phenomenon. It's a bike that came out in 2019. It's from the rival of Kawasaki, Suzuki. I remember when I saw this bike of the week bike I've picked, launch about 6 years ago, I thought, well, here's a hit. That is an incredible, incredible looking machine. So true to the original styling, beast of a bike, looks so just, that beautiful mix, the 1980s angular lines, futuristic style, but brought into the 2020s. I thought it looked superb. It is, of course, the appallingly bad selling sales flop, I think you'd have to say, Suzuki Katana. I think this bike still looks excellent, even though it's been around for 6 years now. I need to test one of these. 1,000cc, 150 horsepower. So it's not just the looks. This is a real performance machine underneath that very good looking body. 215 kilos. Did it arrive too soon? It's right now the time. All of the Japanese bikes are starting to do really well with the 70s, 80s, 90s retro bikes. The Japanese manufacturers are doing superb stuff at the moment. Really very, very good. So did this come a little bit early? In essence, what you have to do with the Katana, take the Suzuki GSX S1000, raise the price and reduce the range so the tank's smaller. So it doesn't immediately sound appealing. And if you have your level-headed hat on, of course, you buy the GSX S1000 because it's cheaper and you can go further between fill-ups. But biking's not all about common sense. For me, the Katana, for me, is a far better looking bike, really excellent looking, and it's got a reputation, despite all that power, for bomb-proof reliability. Almost no horror stories at all about these bikes. Brand new, right now. I've checked, they are still for sale. They haven't just disappeared with a whimper. It's £12,500 for one of these bikes. I found one on Auto Trader. This is the kind of bike I like. So I'm looking at the seller's house and the driveway's immaculate. This is someone, look, if you care about your driveway this much to keep it this immaculate, you're going to care about your vehicles. That for me is just a huge plus when I see someone who cares so much for their house and garden. £5,500 to pick one of these up for now. First year it came out, 2019, 4,750 miles on the clock. Full MOT with no advisories, solid service history, whatever that means. Runs and rides beautifully, off the road for the past year due to lack of use, but that just means it's waiting for someone new to enjoy it properly. That looks like a really legit seller. And that is my favorite color combo, the silver with the red writing. 5.5K for one of those. In my eyes, that is extremely tempting, and I will wrap it up there. Thank you so much, everyone, for watching. I really hope you enjoyed. It feels great to be back. The first podcast episode back in, God, I must have filmed this about 8 days ago. Anyway, I'm waffling. Thank you all for watching. I'll see you in the next one.